This week, we're discussing some pretty serious and devastating topics. This episode does discuss both suicide and violence, so please consider if this is right for you. And if it's not, please look after yourselves and we'll see you back here next week.
This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by us, Loz and Lou, as we have now released our go-to guides. And if you've loved what we've created here, then hit that subscribe button and make a purchase of a go-to guide to make sure that you're set up for success for a return to paid work.
You can shop our go-to guides now at readyornot.au. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I'm Lou and I am fired up.
Yes, you are, Lou. You are. We've had a chat about this online. I'm Loz. I am not as fired up because I don't know the context of today's discussion, which is odd for me because normally I like to be planned, but Lou is really taking the front seat today and taking us all on a journey. But I will kick things off with a good news story. So I said previously, and I actually, Lou, you said this too, but I'm doing it on behalf of both of us. I did say that I wanted to understand AI a bit more. So I am going to a course tomorrow night and learning all things about how it works and how to implement it from a business perspective. And I will share updates and things that I've learned to hopefully save you some time of not going to one of these and taking a tip from me to improve and streamline your work life.
Firstly, love that you found the time for that. You're starting your new 4-day a week role tomorrow. You have two kids, just a bit going on. We also then, not to mention everything you do for Witching Hour and Ready or Not. So that's firstly wild. I don't know how you're doing that time wise. Secondly, you've just reminded me that for the next poll, we wanted to talk about what people are automating at home and at work to make their lives simpler. So this is going to perfectly tie in with that. So I think maybe next episode will have to be all around that. Quickly before we get going, bottle refusal update, because I feel like I've started to bring people on a journey that I never saw myself bringing people on.
Yeah.
And that is Posey's bottle trials and tribulations, we'll call them, because that's what it feels like. So last week, Hayden, I reckon, was a little bit worried about me. I was telling you that I was overwhelmed. And the episode that went live today, I talked about being overwhelmed. And I actually think I was quite flat last week, like almost a little bit depressed, to be honest, at times. And I was talking to Hayden about that I had the Sorrento Writers Festival on the weekend just been, and in the lead up, I was stressed because I booked all these events that I wanted to go to. And he's like, I'll move meetings so that you can go, whatever.
Yes.
The other stressful part of that was that if Posey doesn't take a bottle, I have to take her. So I did take her to about half of the events that I went to, and I didn't take her to a few because it turns out, little darling, we'll have
express breast milk in a bottle.
Exactly. Thank you for helping me there. I couldn't quite get my words out.
Yep.
So my friend Grace actually sent me home with some of her breast milk from her freezer. And because I had none, that was the other stressful part. I hadn't pumped any milk. I had none left. I have been pumping off and on, but Posey's had all that. And the idea was to mix feed so that I wouldn't pump when I wasn't feeding her via the boob.
Yes.
I was like, fuck, another thing to think about, another thing on the mum's plate, blah, 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 blah. My gorgeous friend sent me home with some of her breast milk. I accidentally tasted it. Gorgeous breast milk, by the way. And she took it. So that started my little stash.
Good. That's a huge win.
Yeah. I have a wedding on Friday for an ex-colleague without Hayden. So I need to remind myself to literally pump every day in the lead up because that stash will deplete. But there's a bit of a bottle update. I don't know if that's going to help anyone. That's just Posey's journey. Every baby is so different. Again, we have a whole chapter on this in our go-to guides, which is really great.
Yes.
Maybe I'll need to go back to that if I'm trying to add formula into the mix. But for now, at least she's taking a bottle. It feels like a big win. Got some great freedoms on the weekend. Also, Loz, I am just a chatterbox at the moment. But on Friday night, two of my girlfriends picked me up in the car. One of our friends had made us a lemon pudding each that we sat and ate in the car.
In the car and ate it.
Yeah, sorry. This will make more sense when I like this say where we're going. So we went to watch another one of our friends play footy.
Oh.
So she's playing for the Sorrento Sharks down near where I live in Rye. And there was a whole bunch of mums, kid-free, watching another mum play footy. And I thought to myself, this would not have happened 30 years ago. And our friend packed us a lemon pudding each. So how good's that?
What a dream. What an absolute dream. And kid-free as well. I mean, how much better does it get? Or they did bring their kids.
No, it was kid-free. So that was the night where I was like, great, she's taking the bottle. Out I go.
Beautiful.
Felt great. Had a few drinks without getting hungover or drunk. Perfect result. Had a great time. So now let's get to it. Today we're talking about something that I wish we didn't have to talk about, and that is Australia's serious problem with men's violence towards women. There's a lot to this episode because not only did we do a big poll and Q&A on the topic with our incredible Ready or Not community on Instagram, I also attended a feminism talk yesterday titled "We're Sick of Feeling Unsafe, Feminism's Next Challenge." It was at the Sorrento Writers Festival. It was incredible and it's definitely got me fired up. So I'll give you a bit of context first. The panel included Rosie Batty, who we know, of course, became a domestic violence campaigner after her son was tragically murdered by his own father in 2014. How she even gets up there and does her...
So incredibly sad.
It's amazing. And I also found out when researching for this conversation this morning that her own mother died when she was 6 years old. So not only did she go through the loss of her son, she went through that at a very young age. And she actually even talks about the fact that she didn't think motherhood was for her because she experienced that loss so young. Next up was Catherine Lumby, who actually came to me. I had a coffee with Posey. It makes us sound like we were sitting having a coffee and a yarn together. Actually, I've got a side story here. So I was sitting with Posey, ordered my oat latte because, you know, I'm trying to avoid dairy.
Oh, you're doing the no dairy. Did you stick to it?
Well, Loz, I order a no dairy latte and then I order a cheese and tomato toasty. When I got to my table, I was like, Dal, come on. There's cheese in that. There's dairy in that. So anyway, I'm sticking to it somewhat. So anyway, Catherine Lumby came up to me as I was sitting down for this coffee before her talk and was so obsessed with Posey and made me feel so welcome, which was really nice after all the Arj Barker stuff. So I just want to give a little shout out to her there. So Catherine Lumby is a really interesting, eccentric, intelligent woman. She's an academic and journalist who worked with the likes of NRL to tackle sexual violence and discrimination.
Okay.
She's also worked extensively with schools and unis on research and education, preventing sexual harassment and promoting the responsible use of social media. Really clever, interesting woman. They all were. And lastly was Kate Jenkins, who was the Sex Discrimination Commissioner. That's a bit of a tongueful, that one, a bit of a mouthful.
A tongueful.
Oh, my God. Here she goes.
Sorry,
I'm already
so
like
good.
On autopilot, like not autopilot. Like I'm like an Energizer bunny. I really
not
need
excited,
to slow down.
Passionate. No, it's great.
Exactly.
I enjoy it. I love when this Lucy comes out.
Yeah, she's passionate today. You will be too once you hear everything I have to say, hopefully. How am I? Because I'm going to be so interesting.
No, of course.
She held that role from 2016 to 2023, and she's also been working to lead change in corporate, government, and community sectors for over 30 years with a focus on gender inequality and sexual discrimination.
Okay.
So now I'm going to share a few stories that particularly Catherine and Rosie spoke about. Kate, to me, was more your actionable guest on the panel.
Yep.
But these two had some stories that really struck a chord with me. We weren't allowed to record, so I want to make it clear that I didn't record these conversations, but I was furiously writing notes.
Yes.
So I'll start with Catherine. So from what I can see online, and I'm not sure if this is factual, but it seems about right. She was born in the early 60s into a lower socioeconomic area in Newcastle in New South Wales. This one's quite horrific, but Catherine opened with the fact that her grandpa used to beat her grandma all the time and that you didn't call the cops in those days because it was happening up and down the street. So you didn't call the cops, you called the ambulance and hoped they'd help. It was that normal. The police didn't even get involved.
That's so yuck. And so she witnessed that as well as a child?
She witnessed that. She would see it. He would come home from the pub, I think she said. He was drunk and he would hurt his wife. And she saw that from a very young age. Second piece, which was devastating to hear, is that she's become friendly. So she must live in or around Bondi. She's become friendly with a homeless woman who's 34 years old who fled domestic violence and as a result is homeless. She parks herself outside of Bondi Junction, obviously where the terrible stabbings recently occurred. And Catherine and her husband try and help her as much as they can. So recently after the Bondi stabbings, she went to go and find her. Obviously took her a little bit longer, just as a side story, because this woman, like everyone else, was terrified.
Yeah.
This woman only has 3 front teeth and Catherine was trying to take her to a dental appointment. Catherine is a lawyer and journalist that has been working in this field of sexual discrimination and policy for over 30 years, and it's taking her 12 months and she's still not getting anywhere with trying to find this woman housing, somewhere safe for her to live. She's fled domestic violence. She lives on the streets.
How is that happening? Like, I just cannot comprehend it. I don't understand.
It gives you goosebumps. That's you and I. If you and I had to leave scary situations, that's around about our age, going to the streets because we have no better option. And that gives you an idea of how bad the violence must be, that being on the streets is your safer option.
Exactly.
That was her second point. Her third point was that she was in a lecture to do with rape culture in the 80s at Sydney University, and a bunch of boys brought a sex doll toy into the lecture, a blow-up sex doll toy, as a joke. She and some of her female counterparts staged a walkout, but the fact that that even happened and that heaps of the men were laughing is just an outrage. Lastly, she gave a really interesting example. She used to work with the NRL for quite some time on sexual discrimination. And one of the leaders, I won't begin to understand NRL or to know any of the players, but in this particular club, one of the leaders did something that really shows how we need men, I guess, contradicting what is the norm and what the conversations are that all the other men tend to be having.
Yeah.
So what happened was she had them all in the room. She said, say, for example, you have sex with a woman the first time you meet her. You have a one-night stand with a woman. Is she marriage material? Walk over to the left if she is. Walk over to the right if she's not. What do you think most of them did?
Not marriage material.
Yes. So most men considered a lady that would have a one-night stand,
yeah,
not marriage material, but someone who I believe to be a leader or a captain in that club walked the other way and said, well, that's my wife, so I'm not going to stand for that. And it's so interesting that a man potentially thinks he's marriage material, but because a woman did something that I guess maybe a lot of men, not all men, but a lot classes, making her a bit of a piece of meat, that she couldn't possibly be marriage material. I found that quite stark to listen to her say that.
And I think that's so gross, because there is implicitly, I think, particularly as you get older, there is some form of pressure to do that on a first date. And I don't think that pressure usually comes from women. I think it innately comes from men.
And so a lot of women have this pressure. I mean, there's sexual women out there that enjoy having sex. And if they want to do that safely on a one-night stand, go for it. It's incredible that these men don't hold themselves to the same standard. They're not worrying about if that makes them marriage material. It's quite amazing. I can already see you coming on this journey of getting fired up with me, Lizzie. So Kate Jenkins, I'm not going to quote in this bit because, as I said, I feel like she's more of an advice-based panelist in this discussion. Rosie Batty, moving on to her, some things that really stood out to me. She said, they don't believe your fear, talking about they being the powers that be, don't believe a woman's fear. And that seems to be one of the biggest issues here, is that women are so often not believed.
Yeah, because they're not in the position to make policy changes.
It's so true, isn't it?
Unless it happens to you, it's like giving birth. I know this sounds ridiculous, but if you're a female that gives birth, if you classify yourself as a woman that gives birth, men are never going to understand what that feels like, because physically they cannot do it.
Yeah, they palm it off because it doesn't affect them.
Exactly, 100%. So you need female policymakers to create those rules and laws and legislations. Anyway,
it's amazing. I've been thinking about it so much and I hadn't even made that exact link. Like, I understand the need for females to be in positions of power, but I was thinking of it more from a respecting female's point of view as opposed to what you just said. So that's really interesting. She also said something so powerful, which was that not one thing has been given to women without it being a fight. And I just think that speaks so much to why women are so defeated.
Unless it's the contraception pill.
Is that given without a fight? Do you reckon?
Oh, sorry. Yes, of course. Sorry. I'm thinking like the morning after pill. I see what you're saying. That's so true.
No, I reckon the contraception pill is handed out without even warnings attached to it. It's like, here you go, make sure you take it.
Without even considering a woman's health. That is such an interesting point.
Well, it used to be when I was younger. I don't know if it still is. I think times are changing slightly.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. I see what you mean now. She also then goes on to describe her experience with the system. So the father of her son, who murdered their son, she had intervention and custody orders in place to protect herself and her son. I say protect in inverted commas because they obviously did not work. She said, if I knew that that wouldn't work, I would have taken other measures. But how was she to know at the time that she couldn't trust the system that was meant to protect her, which is terrifying. So she'd had experiences with family violence, and then it ultimately led to her husband running out to the cricket field on that day in 2014 and killing his son, and then him getting shot down. Absolutely devastating.
Oh, that just gives me goosebumps.
It really does. I've got them all over my body as you say that. She also likes to call, not likes to, I think she'd rather not have to talk about this at all, but she calls domestic violence domestic terrorism. She notes that governments are very happy to put lots of money into terrorism, into weapons and all of that stuff, but we don't put the same value on protecting families on a more individual level. And I thought that was just a really interesting way to phrase it. And it sort of, I guess, raises more alarm bells, which it should. And lastly, and I think this is a really interesting point, and I'm going to read it out because I don't want to get it wrong. She talked about how anything in society that devalues the status of women, i.e. the gender pay gap, the opportunity gap, devaluing care work, and the sorts of jobs that unfortunately women populate more, such as nursing, midwifery, teaching, childhood education, all of that. This contributes so greatly to gender equality and the culture of violence against women. So until we value those things and until we pay people what they deserve in those roles, we're not going to value the work that women ultimately are doing at the moment. And we're also not diversifying those fields. If teachers get paid more, more men are going to go into those roles, and therefore more diversity comes from that and more equality. So that was her last point that was incredibly poignant for me.
I'd never thought about it like that, actually. But you're right. As in, if the pay was better, it would attract more men.
Yeah. And the flow on effects from that, like it's not just about bringing more men into the workforce. It's about then it doesn't get perceived as a woman's role to educate and care for the next generation. Like there's so many flow on effects.
Yeah.
And just by a male educator, I imagine spending time, even if it's with other kids 5 days a week, he would be more equipped to look after his own.
True.
So I'll now move on to our poll. I was fired up last night. Reminded me, Lozzie, to put my polls up closer to 5 p.m., not 9 p.m., because then I was passionate about the responses I was getting. I was finding it hard to wind down.
Well, you were away till midnight.
Pretty much. I think it was about 11 that I finally opened my book Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which I'm loving, by the way. So let's get to the poll. The first question, and I'm going to ask you this first, is as a teenager, did you witness a teenage boy saying something disparaging about or towards a teenage girl that was misogynistic in nature?
Absolutely. Yes.
So I wanted to start with this question because I think it paints the picture that this starts really early and that the approach to navigating or dismantling this misogynistic culture that we're experiencing really starts even younger than teenage life. But I think this really paints a picture because I don't think there's many people in this world that have not laughed off a comment that someone said as a teenager that they now look back on and think that was actually disgusting and I'm a bit embarrassed that I was okay with that. So in no surprise to anyone, 97% of people said yes.
Yeah.
3% of people said no. That is terrifying to me and really disgraceful. The next question, do you feel safe or comfortable walking alone at nighttime? Firstly, do you?
I do. If I'm walking in an area that is like a public area with lots of shops.
Yes.
So I live near a street with a lot of shops on it, and I would happily, because they've got like lights in the window front, it feels really bright, airy, there's restaurants around it, so I'd happily walk there. But walking in the side streets freaks me out.
Yeah, so I was just about to say, as soon as you turn left into your street, how are you feeling? Are you racing to that front door?
I'm racing home. Yeah, because it's dark and it's a suburban street, and it just gives me the ick. And it's near a car park, and that really, the car park really freaks me out.
I agree with you.
Car parks are scary, aren't they? So in no surprise at all, again, the no answer received 91% of votes and yes received 9% of votes.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, do you feel less safe, do you think, after the recent attacks such as Bondi? Are you more conscious of it? That's my next question to the pollers.
Yeah, I think I would say yes, because when things like this happen, they put it back to being front of mind. And I think I messaged you the other day, and this is so ludicrous, but I was going for a walk with Zave in the pram. It was on that like dusk time, so it was starting to get a bit dark. And I had my headphones in. He was pretty chill. I was walking to the station to actually meet Ryan after work. And somebody behind me was obviously running towards the train, but the notion of them running behind me scared me enough to like turn around and be worried. And I normally would not be like that.
Yeah.
So I think when things are happening in the media, it makes you feel more afraid for a short period of time because it's front of mind, and then it dies down again, and then it comes back up again. It's always there.
Yeah.
It's just more prominent. That's all.
Quickly on that, would you wear your AirPods at nighttime if you're walking in the dark?
I spoke to a friend about this the other day. She's like, Loz, you should never be wearing AirPods at night. And I'm like, yeah, but then what do I do? Just walk in silence. Like that's the time that I have to myself that I want to listen to a podcast or.
I could take one ear out. I want you to take one ear out.
I know, but then why are we even saying that? Like, it's just wild.
Because then I know it's a short-term problem, a short-term solution. This shouldn't be the solution, but I'm just thinking about you walking at night and I don't want you to have both your headphones in.
Yeah, I just think the whole thing behind it though is I'm like, how fucking ridiculous that as someone that's 35 that could feel comfortable walking in the day that as soon as
I know.
It's so crazy.
It's so wild. It's so unfair. So the next question was, have you noticed feeling a little bit less safe since the Bondi event? So 77% said yes and 23% said no. Still a resounding vote for yes.
Yep.
When you're walking alone, day or night, are you constantly conscious of the men around you? I noticed the other day since Bondi, I think always, but I noticed the other day that since Bondi, I've been particularly conscious of the men around me. I was at a park the other day with Hades, but one of us was more with the dog. One of us was more chasing Ray, the toddler. And I found myself a little bit further away from Hades. I'm very conscious of the men around me. Have you noticed that for yourself?
I haven't when it comes to men in particular, but I have noticed that I'm more aware of my surroundings in general.
You're taking stock.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yes is an 85% and not really is 15%. Again, overwhelming. All of these votes have been overwhelming. Next one, when you're walking alone, day or night, do you notice yourself taking any small safety measures, such as keeping your keys on you or keeping your phone charged and ready?
Yes.
You do? What do you do?
My keys are always on me. I always have my key on. My location is always on my phone.
Same as me. Phone is always really close to me. Find my friends is available and keys are either in the hand or in the nappy bag.
But I'm like, what am I going to do with my keys? Like,
I know.
What am I going to do with it? I'm not going to stab someone with my door key that's 2 centimeters long. It's ridiculous.
It's
so
interesting.
Whack.
It actually doesn't make sense, does it? But we do it. It's almost like we're maybe signaling that we're near wherever we're going. We're either near our house or we're near our car, so don't come for me. It doesn't really make sense.
Bizarre.
Maybe that's why. Mm. So yes was 92%. So 92% of women each day are walking out of their house thinking about how to keep themselves safe. If only I could say that the government was doing as good a job.
My husband doesn't even take a key. He wouldn't even take a key. He's lost
so
many keys.
No, they wouldn't even think about it. I wish I asked Hayden before this actually, because he wouldn't even think about it.
Or I would never.
And you've just reminded me that I'm going to have to link in this episode that Instagram reel that I posted that described the bear versus man and bear versus woman analogy. I'm going to put that in the show notes. We won't talk about it because Hannah Ferguson describes it so perfectly.
She does.
In fact, we'll drop the audio in right here. We'll play it now.
There's this really insightful TikTok trend going on at the moment where women are being asked if they'd rather be left alone in the woods with a man or with a bear. And most women I've seen interviewed say a bear. And the reasons vary from things like, if I was attacked in the woods by a bear, people would believe me, they wouldn't ask what I was wearing or try to shift the blame to me. Things like, I know what to expect from the bear can only perform physical violence or kill me, but nothing more, nothing else. And it's a really interesting piece of discussion, right? But I saw something this morning that was even more fascinating, and that was a wife asking her husband if he would rather leave their child, their daughter, in the woods with a bear or with a man. And he sits on it for a while, he asks for more information, he can't have more information, he just doesn't know anything about the bear or the man. And he sits there and says, proves how much I don't trust people. And then the wife says, okay, a woman or a bear? And he immediately says, woman. And I think it's just the perfect video that articulates the distinction between men's perception of male violence and the reality. It just proves that men have a deep understanding of how many men perform acts of violence against women and how big the risk is to us, women and children, every single day just operating normally in society. But it takes the comparison to a wild animal for men to clearly articulate the problem and the prevalence of male violence. What does that say about us?
So then I said, if yes, what safety measures do you take? I'm going to repeat myself heaps here and I'm going to go through it quickly, but I didn't want to pick just a few because I want to highlight.
How many people do the same things?
Exactly. I have illegal pepper spray. I walk in areas with more people and closer to main roads.
Yes.
AirPods in, but not actually on, so I can hear what's happening around me. I never have headphones in if walking alone at night. Phone always in hand. Sharing Uber ride with partner. Locking car doors as soon as I get in car. Looking around when putting my babies in the car, trying to do it in the least vulnerable way. I do that too. The text me when you get home / leave agreement. Reclaim the night keyring alarm. Not wearing AirPods. Not openly using my asthma puffer. Keys out, call husband, and always wear Apple Watch walking to car after late shift. That's from a midwife. When I was younger, I used to walk with a stick. Took an Uber last night and he queried why I wouldn't take the train. Another expense for women. As soon as I explained it, he understood, but very interesting that he didn't even have to think about it. Phone in hand, more aware of surroundings. At night, if it's a quiet area, I keep a key between my fingers always. Checking to make sure other women are close. I feel safer if women are closer. Totally agree with that one. Keys in hand, music / podcast on quiet. If I have headphones in, sending location to husband. Conscious of how I position my pram when passing people who make me uncomfortable. Lock car when driving at night / early morning. Keys primed and ready to stab if walking.
But what a key. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, it's just a safety blanket, I think, isn't it?
It's a safety blanket, but the actual use of that would be non-damaging. But in our minds, we're like, what's something that we can use that we've got? Like,
we're clutching at straws.
Outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah. Used to wear AirPods when walking with my baby. Since Bondi, only wear one and no noise cancellation so I can hear if someone is approaching us. Keys through knuckles or pretend to be on phone. I don't even listen to music anymore so I can hear if someone's coming. Call my husband while walking. Phone always on me and generally easy to access. If at night, keys in hand with keys between fingers. Keys in hand, pretending to talk on phone. Cross the street if someone's making me feel uncomfortable. AirPods not on noise cancelling. Carrying an umbrella, having my phone ready to call someone. Phone always in hand, keys always accessible. Watching my back always. Take dog, tell someone where I am when home. Phone in hand, vigilant and on alert, eyes in back of head, lit up areas, walk quickly. Only ever have one earbud in when walking, even during the day. If going for a walk at nighttime, take my dog, never alone. I share my location with my mum, sister, and my husband and let them know if I'm ever walking alone. Also, that 5 button press on your phone to alert emergency services is good. I didn't actually know that.
Neither did I.
After PM shift, when I worked, Cabrini would bring husband on long walk back to car. Phone in hand always. And sometimes I'll call my partner or a friend to chat to while I walk.
Do you know what is so wild? When Ryan goes for a run, if he gets home at like 6:30 or after the kids are in bed, he will walk out with no keys. He'll put his phone in his back pocket, so behind him, and he'll have his headphones in and he'll just go for it.
Doesn't even have to think about it.
No, but it's so funny how you said most women either have one AirPod in, no AirPods in, they're not on noise cancelling, and they have their phone in their hand.
Ready to go. Not even in their bag, in their fucking hand.
That's what I mean. Ryan has his in his backpack. He wouldn't even be able to. For him to unzip it to actually call someone, like, I feel like if something happened to him, somebody else would have to access his phone.
Yes. That just speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It does.
Next one that I put out is, it's clear this is an emergency that needs more action and a multifaceted approach, which I've stolen from Kate Jenkins. We'll get to that soon. Yeah. If you were in charge tomorrow, what would you do to tackle men's violence against women in this country? Here were some of the answers. And again, I'm going to repeat myself a lot because it's just so resounding to everyone else what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Legalize pepper spray, target young in schools, and sex ed and consent needs a huge revamp.
Agreed.
Program in schools around respectful relationships. Male leads teaching young males. That's a really important one, I think. Education from kinder, more media attention around the issue, which we're finally starting to see, and more research into domestic violence. More education in school settings. Education. Teens need to be able to identify types of abuse, coercive control, etc. A men's behavioural program. Much harsher penalties for breaches of IVOs.
Intervention orders.
Stop putting them out on bail. Education as a long game, extra police resource and money for DV organisations.
Yes.
As well as harsher sentences against any sort of abuse, violence, threats against women. We also need education so people know they can speak up more and know what a narcissist is. Mandatory classes on consent and gendered issues in classrooms and workplaces. Parents need educational material, time with their kids, and to not be stressed the fuck out. Support parents to cultivate in children healthy attitudes towards women. Support parents to give children healthy environments for psychological development. Education and better support for children that witness family violence young. Education, it starts young. Harsher penalties, get rid of bail. Last one here is education in school, no tolerance approach for misogyny in school.
I think the education piece is enormous.
Yeah, it's just so unanimous that we need better education to support this push.
And I agree with the person that said also, not just education for children, but don't forget where children are looking to. They're looking at parents for role models. And I think for a lot of parents, it can be difficult to know where to start with those conversations and how to appropriately have them. So it would also be great if there was something either run by the council, by government bodies, that is something that you could tap into as a family, you know, on like how to have conversations around consent with your children.
It should be like something that you have to do when either you're pregnant or you're starting primary school. Like, it should be compulsory.
I agree with that.
It should be like getting vaccinations to attend school, you know? You aren't allowed to attend school unless you've had your vaccinations. Do this sort of shit too. You have to go as parents, with or without your kids, maybe they're too young, to an education session on this.
But I think sometimes what happens too, Lou, is, for example, when it comes to sex education, right? And this is very different, but a lot of parents might think to themselves—
But it's actually not. Like, it's a great example.
Well, a lot of parents might think, I don't want to have to get into that conversation. That's a bit awkward, or how they'll learn that out. They'll figure that out at school and rah, 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 rah. But what they're actually needing from you as a parent to say, like, we don't have to get into the nitty gritty if you don't want to. But these are some of the things that are non-negotiable when it comes to sex education.
Oh.
Have you asked your partner if it is okay?
Like, fucking men.
Those conversations can be hard to have with your children, but they need to be had. And I think a lot of the time parents don't want to have them because they're uncomfortable. So how can we actually enable parents?
Yes, to be more comfortable having those conversations.
Exactly. I'm not just saying it's on parents either.
But we do need to help parents.
Yeah.
That reminds me of that episode where you talked about that we need to name our genitalia properly and how it helps 100%. To empower and educate kids. I feel like that ties in with this conversation. So that's really interesting. Last one there, which was too big for the question box, was put more women in charge, which is coming to what you said earlier.
Yeah, agreed.
Compensate domestic labour. Change the narrative. So many of these misogynistic men believe women owe them something because they earn a paycheck. We need to figure out how to tackle male entitlement from a young age, because men don't, like, boys aren't bad. They don't get born with this. They learn it. It's society.
I think that's the scariest thing. Someone said this to me recently. They've just had a baby and they're like, oh, like, how are you finding it? And she said, oh, it's so terrifying because they're such a blank canvas.
Yes.
And when she said it to me like that, I was like, far out. That's so fucking true. Like, no one is born into the world as this horrific, horrible, narcissistic, awful person. Like, very few, unless there's some severe mental condition or—
Yeah, of course. Like, there's the, you know, 0.1 percenters.
Exactly. But most are a blank canvas. They're sponges. They absorb what they see and who they're around. And that includes friendship groups. That includes teachers. That includes you, your extended family. Like, what they see and observe is essentially what they'll become. So, you know, you have to set the scene.
100%. They're not born assholes. That's just not true. There was an incredible poster held up at the rallies on the weekend that said, how do beautiful boys become something men? I don't know what it said, but it
evil.
Was
evil.
Exactly.
I think it was.
Yes, I think it was. And it was. It speaks to that perfectly. So the next question was, do you see a link between gender inequality and men's violence towards women?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Surely. Yes was 94%. To be honest, and I'm not having you go at the people that said no, I'm thinking that this links into the education that we need around this. The fact that anyone said no alarms me, because the research, all you have to do is Google the link between gender inequality and men's violence towards women, and you'll find so much research. The link is undeniable. It's well-researched, and they spoke about it at length yesterday. And I feel like the fact that even a few people said no speaks volumes of how uneducated we are on the links between what the cause and effect is of misogyny and violence towards women. Next up, have you experienced any overt or subtle sexual harassment of any type in the workplace? I will get you to guess this. How many people do you think said yes, or what percentage?
I think over 50% would say yes when viewing it in hindsight. So I think there would be a portion that would say it was full on sexual harassment. It was in your face. And then I think if you actually go back and think of like comments that were made when you were really young, starting in your career, or things that you've overheard a coworker say to somebody else, it's little things like that that you might not recognize at the time, but you look back and be like, that was gross.
100%. So 72% said yes, 28% said no.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. There's so many things growing up that I would have even forgot about that didn't really harm me. And then there's the things you do remember. So I'm actually going to share this story with you. I worked at a doctor's office at a medical practice, and sometimes I would work late on the Thursday night shift till 9 p.m. There's actually two parts to this. I'm going to start with the other part.
Okay.
Bear with me with the late finish part. I remember a male GP who was an absolute grump and a weird guy. He once walked out and told me that I looked like Barbarella. I had never seen Barbarella. I did not know what Barbarella was. So it's an old movie with Jane Fonda, and the posters and the advertising around it is this hyper-sexualized character in Jane Fonda playing her. But all the posters, they're just very sexual.
Okay.
Very creepy. And as soon as I Googled it, I was shocked that he would say something like that to me. I was 19. He would have been about 60. And I just remember thinking, this is so inappropriate. Do not think of me in a sexy outfit or whatever. And then the second part of that is, even after that, my mum and dad told me to ask him, because I was really scared. With the late shift, you had to go down in the basement and lock up, and it was dark down there. It was awful. And as we said, car parks for some reason feel really scary for women.
Yeah, freak you out.
Yeah. And I asked him if he'd wait back for me while I did that before he'd leave, and he flat out said, no, I'm not your father. I'm not waiting for you.
What a douchebag.
So there's just a little insight. I know. So this part really, well, we've delivered a trigger warning at the top of this episode, but we're going to get into some pretty awful stories here. So some of these are a little bit more subtle. It doesn't mean that they're not terrible, but some really do need a trigger warning. Some of these are really terrible. So if you think that this isn't for you, please tune out now. First one, I quit an agency and the male CD said it was a shame that the most attractive creative was leaving. Fucking hell.
Fucking gross.
Disgusting.
Fuck. I also don't understand these comments. How is that supposed to even, I feel like they're said because I feel it might be flattering, but I'm like, you're probably
old. Or is
old.
It because she was leaving and he thought that was maybe an olive branch to be like, maybe she wants me and I obviously want her. Who knows?
Yeah, but yuck. Women don't want to be seen like that. They prefer
it's
to be recognized
fucking
for
disgusting.
Their work. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Next one is manager at Macca's would crack the shits if I didn't hug him or hold his hand. The fuck?
Oh, fuck, that makes me feel sick.
So fucked. I said I was going to gym. My boss looked me up and down and said, you don't need to work out. That is disgusting. Male chef said he'd like to see me in a bikini and that I must look good under there, meaning under my clothes.
Oh, yuck.
My high school maths teacher told me I had a firm derriere, so a firm bum. I was 17, he was 50 plus. So now I'm about to go into some deeper ones where people DM'd me. The question box was too small. This first person, my ex-husband breached the IVO 33 times, found guilty of assault. She then goes on to say, Kids First wrote a significantly long letter in conjunction with Community Child Protection, stating he should not have access to the children and is an unacceptably high risk of harm. My lawyer said to me, unfortunately, in family court, that doesn't mean much. They'll just pick it apart and say he wasn't interviewed by Kids First. He refused the interview by Kids First. It was only information provided by yourself and the children. It's so fucked. It's not just the violence. It's then they can get away with it. That time of separation is the highest risk time. So when you're separating from a husband or a partner.
Yeah.
And also go on to have access to the kids and commit further control and emotional violence for years afterwards through the kids. That's horrific.
Oh, that makes me feel so sick.
It actually gives you goosebumps, doesn't it? So that control that they still have over the children and therefore you.
There's one thing, and this is not politically correct to say, but there's one thing when you become a mum to have abuse towards yourself, which I haven't personally experienced. So I can't say it from like a standpoint of having experienced it myself. But there's one thing to think there'd be violence inflicted on yourself and a completely different one to have violence inflicted on your children.
I would literally rather die. And I'm not exaggerating. I'd rather die than someone hurt my child.
That's exactly right. And imagine if that was your ex-partner and nothing's being done about it. Like, is there not some, like, it just blows my mind. There's no way I would let my kids go to my ex-partner. I'd be like, you'd have to physically take them from my house. Like, there's not a chance.
But they would. That's the thing. It's so fucked up. It just goes to show again that these powers that be don't actually have women's and children's best interest in heart.
They're not working quick enough.
And again, it comes to police structures and those sorts of organisations. What are they mostly made up of?
I know.
Men. Next one. My married boss messaged me before a mutual friend's dinner to say that I gave him butterflies. At the dinner, he spoke about wanting to date other women and then asked me how I was getting home. He apologized for being creepy in inverted commas because it was obviously much worse than that. The next week by coming into my office and shutting the door. After I shut it down and said that I appreciated the apology, he told another colleague / mutual friend that he was worried about my mental health. He no longer works there and I continued to slay in the workplace. You go, girl. Second part of that is in saying that, it completely rattled me for about a year and I didn't tell anyone at work because I felt so ashamed. I wasn't scared that I had let him on because I hadn't and knew the power imbalance between us could jeopardize my career trajectory if he started undermining me after I rejected him. When he left and I told my colleagues about what happened, they were incredibly supportive and validating and I was able to move on without any shame or fear. What does that say? That a man who... either by perception or by his literal position description has more power. And so he was using that to undermine her because she rejected him.
Oh, that's pathetic, isn't it?
Another person said that someone she knew was minding two kids from primary school who were friends with the daughter of this person she knew. And the mum was meant to pick up the kids the next day at 2 p.m., rocked up at 6 p.m. with a black eye. That actually makes you like nearly cry.
That's really sad.
When I was 18, I worked as a receptionist at a specialist medical clinic. The owner of the business / surgeon was very intense and we would all get yelled at daily. The manager pulled me aside early on and asked me to make a special effort on days he was there and wear my hair in a particular way and wear makeup because he likes it. Poor little 18-year-old me didn't know any different. I was the only one who was asked to do this as well. I always looked presentable, but he specifically asked for me to wear my hair in a bun because the boss liked that on me. I'm sure he continues to get away with it. What the fuck?
Oh, it's so icky. But this is what I mean about hindsight. It's like at the time, you want to please because you're young and you're in the workforce for the first time and you're thinking, this is weird, but it's just my hair. Okay. But then what next?
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but because you're a young woman who hasn't really been given much power, you feel powerless around an older man.
You do.
Scary.
Yes.
This one really breaks my heart and this one deserves a proper trigger warning. This one involves death. So the first part of this isn't involving death, but the second part from the same person is. So I had this one boss when I was literally 22, 15 years ago, that would come up from behind and massage my shoulders. I think he thought he was being endearing or nice, but it was just creepy. He would do it in front of other staff members too. Now, this is the second part that will literally break your heart. Also, the amount of verbal and emotional abuse I have had from my last two boyfriends is fucked. My first boyfriend, when I was 19, ended up bottling me, threw a red wine bottle at my face and broke my nose. I charged him with assault, went through court, the police represented me, and nothing came of it. This same boyfriend emotionally and verbally abused his girlfriend before me and basically set the tone for what she thought was normal. Now that poor girl is dead, as she was murdered by her boyfriend at the time 2 years ago. God, that makes me feel sick.
So sad.
Stabbed to death in front of her daughter. It infuriates me that I feel like this could have been prevented if the men she dated were held accountable from the start or rehabilitated, raised right, etc., etc. Not all, but a lot of violence comes from how people were raised, what they saw in their home growing up. It's like racism. That shit isn't in you. You're taught it. I couldn't agree with this more. The lack of rehabilitation and support that people get that grow up in really scary households and the effects that that can have as adults and trying to like reclaim back their power and I guess, I don't know, try and get rid of their trauma by inflicting it on others. It needs to be taken seriously.
I will also add to that though, the other level that we're going to see with our children is social media and what they're on and what they're being served and who is getting in their ear and the accounts that they follow.
Like Andrew Tate.
And it's very difficult. Yeah, it's really difficult to monitor, but it's that kind of continuous shit and the algorithm picks it up.
Yeah, and it literally serves Andrew Tate content to young boys.
They click on once and it continues exactly.
It's interesting you bring that up because a feminist researcher I interviewed last Thursday, Stephanie Westcott, will be a future guest of Ready or Not. So that episode is coming. And she literally studies the Andrew Tate effect and how it's affecting boys in schools as young as primary school and the way they're treating their female adult teachers as a result. So stay tuned for that.
He's gross.
He's disgusting. Next one. I used to work at an agency who worked on major events. We worked on one every year that was Melbourne City Council run and had about 5 months of planning. It was a week-long program of over 50 events. Suffice it to say, we became an extension of the City of Melbourne's events team. On the second to last night of the program, we were having a drink with the team and the partnerships manager came up to me at the event bar and grabbed my ass for all to see, including his boss, the head of City of Melbourne events and my boss. I quickly removed his hand and was really upset and for some reason embarrassed returning to my colleagues. No one said a thing. I know that it was seen because the next day his boss came and apologized to me while I was in the middle of our last event and surrounded by my team and volunteers. He walked away and I had to explain what he was apologizing for. He later sent the guy up to me also to apologize and he said that he thought I was interested. It was never spoken of again and my boss at the time, a woman in her 50s, never said a thing. I was 23 at the time. Fuck's sake, this shit is ridiculous.
It is.
Not me personally, but I was once on set with Warwick Capper for a car sales ad. The stylist was bending over to tie her shoelace and he literally said out loud in front of everyone, while you're down there, dot, 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 and nobody said anything. Disgusting.
It is disgusting.
A senior male staff member once announced in a large meeting that we could make more sales if I stood out the front in my bikini. I was brand new to the role, early 20s, and no one, men or woman, spoke up.
Please don't tell me that person did that.
No, I don't think she did it, but fucking hell.
Oh my God. That's almost...
That's so degrading.
Do you know what? I would also ask you, Lou, as you're reading through these, do you think the older you are, the more you would stand up for less shit and say something?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And that's part of the education we need too, helping to empower women. Because they shouldn't have to, but we do also need to call it out. But the problem is we need men to call it out too, because until men call out other men's behavior, we don't see change.
Yeah.
Like the Imperfects podcast that's going viral, actually. That's men calling out men, and at least they're starting to open up the fucking discussion.
Yeah.
I was 21 and working at a family law firm of three brothers. Regularly, they would ask questions like, have you ever had... dot, dot, dot. Do you want to try... dot, dot, dot. Can you put that file really low, etc.? It was absolutely disgusting. Another male boss got really drunk and tried to kiss me one night at a work party, claiming I had led him on. I was 24. He was in his 40s with kids. Monday morning at work, he was crying and begging me not to tell HR when I got upset. He told me he could make me lose my job, so let's just forget it.
Oh, disgusting.
That is so fucked up. And I have...
Despicable.
I have one more story. And so this tied in with another story I was sent, and this involves another death warning. So I was at Hedley Thomas's talk after the other feminism talk at the Sorrento Writers Festival. And I posted about that too after this poll, saying it felt like a full circle moment to go from this talk on feminism to then hearing about how Hedley Thomas basically embarrassed and challenged the systems that protected Chris Dawson and enabled him to be a free man for nearly four decades when he murdered his wife.
Yeah.
Side story on that. Hedley Thomas speaking about hindsight and how we learn how bad these things are later often. Hedley Thomas said that when he interviewed some of the schoolgirls that were having sexual relationships with Chris Dawson and his twin brother, at the time they felt special. They felt like the chosen ones, and now they're so horrified.
They are. And just to intervene on that, if you haven't already, I'm sure many listeners have, but it's a podcast called The Teacher's Pet, or is there something else? Is there something else?
No, that's it. The Teacher's Pet. It's a book now too, actually. And the book is interesting because apparently, which I've bought it for my dad because he loved the series.
It was so good.
The book actually as well touches on his experience throughout it and the toll it took on him being so obsessed with that case and the toll it took on his relationship with his wife and everything. So I think it would be a really interesting read.
It was a really messed up listen, but it was one of those things that you just could not continue on.
No, it was like a phenomenon, as he said. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So after that, this is what someone sent in to us. She was actually happy to be identified. I'm not going to identify her. Some people in the Melbourne community who listen to this podcast may recognize her voice, so she's okay with that, but I'm not going to name her just because I don't really feel comfortable doing so, to be honest. So here it is.
Basically, when I was at school, I moved schools a lot when I was younger, but I was at this one particular school for a year and a half, and this teacher had a really strong liking for my best friend, who was also called Jessica. So we were like these two little besties. And he would get us to massage his shoulders while he was reading to the class. And one time I had red ink on my hand, like I'd stamped my hand, and so I got red ink on the shoulder of his shirt. And he screamed at me, what am I going to tell my wife? And also, like, when we'd be massaging him, if another teacher went to come into the classroom, he would get us to hide behind his chair. And he was just, he had this really strong liking for this, for my bestie. And it wasn't until I was a bit older, I left that school halfway through that year. It wasn't until I was a bit older, like maybe 5 to 7 years later, and I would see her out at parties and she would always be absolutely shit-faced. And it dawned on me that what that teacher had been doing was not at all appropriate. And I wanted to ask her and, you know, say, hey, are you okay? Like, did anything inappropriate ever happen or whatever? Just start a dialogue about it. But before I could, she jumped off a cliff and died. And that teacher still works at that school, and I've shared that story with someone who works with him, and she can't believe it. And it's so tricky because, like, part of me wants to tell on him. And then part of me wonders if he's just an innocent, stupid old man who, I don't know. It sounds so stupid when I say out loud, right?
That last bit, I really want you to speak to that, because what she says at the end is something that I think a lot of us...
It doesn't make you sound stupid at all.
Yeah, but it's something that I think a lot of us are embarrassed to admit, that we're not sure how unsafe...
Look at these goosebumps.
Yeah, you've got goosebumps. I could literally actually see them through the screen. I've got them too. But I think it speaks to our embarrassment when it comes to this, because we've been trained to accept it so well that then someone like that is openly admitting that she's not actually sure how bad that is. And as soon as she says it out loud, she's like, how ridiculous is that?
It's so bizarre. And this is like the worst analogy for it, because I'll explain where it comes from. But there's a saying that says, if you see it, say it than sort it. And it's actually on the tube in London, which is awful. But I do think that applies to this situation. If you see something and it doesn't feel right or it's odd, the best thing that you can do is say something about it to somebody else. Let them draw the conclusion for you.
So it sounds like she told another teacher at that school, but that teacher must have done nothing about it. Or maybe that teacher was encouraging her to do it.
But, fucking yuck.
Oh, it's scary, isn't it? But it's so sad the way at the end you can hear her shame about it. It's just awful.
I know, but I think the shame would come because she didn't say something at the time.
100%.
That's where the shame comes in, because the lecturer would have done something.
And it's so unfair because it's not, I know, and it's not on a young girl to make that call. It's on an older man to not do what he did.
No, but that's the education that we should be doing now, Lou. Like, I think what we should be saying to girls now is, if you see something, if something happens, if you witness something, just say something to someone else immediately, even if you feel like it's fine. Like, let someone else help you draw that conclusion, because when it's all on you, it's really difficult.
But we've seen so many examples, even in just these stories, where people either reject a man or whatever, and that man threatens them and says, I will get you evicted, or I'll get you kicked out of this school, or I'll get you kicked out of this workplace if you bring this up. So that's the paradox of all this. It's like, we can empower women and girls to be stronger with their voices, but until the patriarchy is somewhat dismantled, it doesn't really get us anywhere. I mean, we still need to speak up. Don't get me wrong.
It makes me so sad.
Oh, isn't that just terrible?
It's terrible. It's terrible that she says at the end of that sentence, like,
I know, it breaks your heart.
She's unsure about it.
And you can hear her going through that thought process in her head and coming around to, what am I saying? Of course, that's terrible. But because she's probably reasoning or reconciling with the little girl in her head that actually went through it, it's hard to find clarity in these things. It's truly wild. Thank you to that person for sharing. It goes without saying that you really shouldn't have any responsibility to action on that. And that man just shouldn't have been doing what he was doing in the first place. Lastly, I asked people how they were feeling right now about all of this. I said, I'll go first. I feel fucking furious, absolutely fed up that women have to fight so hard to be believed and looked after by the very systems and structures that are meant to protect us. And I feel fired up in a positive and negative way, but in a positive way, after that incredible chat that I went to with Kate Jenkins, Rosie Batty, and Catherine Lumby. Here's what others had to say. Defeated, furious, frightened, angry, scared, vulnerable, but also empowered by all the women getting loud about this.
Yes.
Fuming at how fragile the male ego is and how women keep the fucking world turning while men whinge. I've got to say, I love that one. Disparaged and exhausted, same shit, different day, well said. Rage at our government for its inability to protect women here, and a big responsibility as a boy mum. Scared and angry. At a loss as to where to start with this issue. Sad to think so many women are dealing with DV, let alone random public violence in public places. Terrified, broken. It just hurts so much. I can't even describe how sad this makes me. Furious and exhausted by it, enraged and helpless, so, so angry, furious, tired, defeated, and scared for my children. And the last person said, which I'm going to comfortably question this, because I know that this person is quite comfortable having robust debate, which I really appreciate and respect, because I think that's something that we are losing the art of a bit in this society.
Exactly.
But I am going to question this one, and I'm interested to see what you say. This person says, I feel like people are missing the point. Boys are products of their environment, not evil. I think that's a really interesting reaction to this, because I don't think that anyone is outwardly angry at boys. I think we're angry at the education system and the powers that be. What do you think?
I agree that boys and men are products of their environment, as are women. So I don't think that's a gendered...
Yeah, we all are.
...sentence. We all are. But I don't think the anger...
I don't think anyone's walking around calling boys evil, do you?
I think there's a lot of anger at the moment towards men because of what's happened.
Yeah.
But I think it's more, to your point, around what are we doing to make sure that this doesn't happen again? And how can we educate men and women and our policymakers on the things that need to change to prohibit it from continuously happening. Because this isn't stuff that's happening once.
Yeah.
It continues to happen.
I think the stat is every 4 days at the moment.
Yeah. So what are we seeing in terms of reform? What is being done? Who is speaking on it from a higher level saying, we are putting these things in place.
Mm.
We have noticed there is a problem. The problem is it's silent. Like, it happens, the media picks it up, and then 4 days later it's reported on again. Like, come on, what are we doing as a country to facilitate change? At the moment, it feels like nothing.
Amen. I couldn't have said it better myself. I thought that was an interesting approach to that. How are we feeling, to be totally honest? But we move on. So the next question was, what do we do about it? I want to start with some of the things that came out of yesterday's chat.
Uh-huh.
So Kate Jenkins gave it the best analogy. She said that we need multiple reinforcing messages in high impact settings. So she used the analogy of cigarettes and seatbelts. So when stricter laws came in for cigarettes and when seatbelts became legalized, when it became illegal not to wear a seatbelt, there was different types of messaging. We learned that what cigarettes did for us. It wasn't just, you know, they're becoming illegal for minors, this, that, and the other. We're putting laws around how they're promoted. It was messaging around how bad they are for us. With seatbelts.
And imagery,
exactly. Seatbelts, the same thing. It was big billboards calling out why we need seatbelts. It's advertising on TV and radio explaining the risk factors of not using them. We need a similar multi-pronged approach to how we tackle this. It needs to come in from the education system. It needs to come in from policy.
From policymakers, yeah.
The list goes on. So I just thought that was a really interesting way for us all to understand it, because I don't pretend to be as smart as these policymakers or these incredible women that I saw yesterday, and it made it really obvious for me. Catherine Lumby had two pieces of advice more for the everyday person like you and I. Firstly, she says she mentors any young women that she comes into contact with that are coming to her about these sorts of issues. So just conversation, inspiring them to feel empowered enough to understand the problems and how they might be able to help fix them. And secondly, she recommends finding male allies. I thought this was a really interesting and important piece of advice, because as we know, until men get on board, the messaging won't change. We've seen how much the imperfect guys talking about this has led to more discussion with men already, socially, on social media, on television networks, even in the last week. We need our male allies to be standing up for this. And a perfect example of how you and I can incorporate this into our daily lives is having these conversations with brothers, partners, dads, the list goes on. So that was beautiful advice from Catherine. And lastly, from Rosie, I thought this was also really incredible, because sometimes it can feel like you're walking up the steepest incline and you're not actually getting anywhere. She talked about doing what you can a lot. She talks about how, as an advocate and working in advocacy, that doesn't pay her bills. So she needs other work too. So she can't dedicate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of her time to this. She has to pick her moments. So for our listeners, that might be as simple as talking about it to the male in your life, or starting to pull people up for misogynistic language. So I thought that was really interesting. And even maybe just reading educational pieces around the topics and starting to understand them better and starting to understand the root causes. They're little things that we can do with our limited time. And the last one, which is just a positive note to end on, is to read Rosie Batty's new book, Hope. I'll read you a quick synopsis. So I think her first book was called A Mother's Story. Yes, it was actually, because it's in the synopsis. I'll read it for you now.
Okay.
Following on from her runaway bestseller, A Mother's Story, which detailed the lead up to her son's murder, Hope shares what happened to Rosie the day after the worst day of her life, and how she reclaimed hope when all hope was lost. She shares her struggles with anxiety, PTSD, self-doubt, and self-loathing, and how she finally confronted her grief. She shares the stories of those who have inspired her to keep going and given her hope when she needed it most. In this heartfelt and at times heartbreaking memoir, Rosie tells how she found the light on her darkest days and how she found the hope to carry on. Kate Jenkins really spoke beautifully about this book and really encouraged everyone to read it. And I think I'm going to pick that one up. I think it would be a really great read. Again, I can't believe that she can even get up and talk after what she went through. So I think that's a great tip.
I also just want to say on that, Lou, what we've spoken about two highlights that when it comes to domestic violence, as per the stories that you've told, it doesn't necessarily and it doesn't always start with physical violence. So the thing that I think is most worrying is like a lot of those comments where like men have asked women to do certain things or behave a certain way or made those like little snippet, you know, remarks here and there. That can be how it starts. Like it's that lowering of confidence and that like horrible feeling, but how it ends can be very different.
100%. And like coercive control in the house, just emotional abuse, all of that.
Absolutely. And we're seeing more and more organizations step up to that. Like Commonwealth Bank did an amazing marketing, and they still do it, marketing campaign around financial abuse, which I think is
really interesting topic.
Exactly. It's also contributing considerably to domestic abuse. But one thing I would say is on your point of do what you can, if you see a comment in a workplace that you do not feel is appropriate, call it out, because it's things like that that lead to bigger problems long term. And by calling out that behavior when you see it, as opposed to letting it slide, it gets that snowball effect and it might start as
that.
And
it starts to embarrass men from saying these things.
Exactly. And it also, for that one person, that one woman that has a comment made to her like that, she starts to think, oh, no one else said anything, like maybe it's okay. So then the second job she gets, maybe someone says something that's a bit worse. And then in her personal life, maybe she finds a partner that also speaks to her like that. It's all those combusting things that happen. So by doing what you can and acting when you see something, I swear it might not feel like it at the time, but it has such an impact on somebody else's experience longer term.
That's such an interesting take and such an important one. One question that I did forget to share tips on, which I know a lot of people wrote, I want to know the answer to this, so I'm glad I found it now and not later, is yes. For people with slightly older kids. So look, I might start to bring language that is respectful towards women into Ray's vocabulary, but he's two, he doesn't understand. So I wanted to know what older people are doing or people of older children are doing. So here's some tips. Open convos around stats, facts, and fears of how women and how new generations can change it. My boy is 8. We model respectful interactions and conditions for good mental health. Really hard with our 7-year-old boy. I don't want him to think he's bad. Men have really let boys down here. My son is only a toddler, but we already talk about consent regarding his body and others in age-appropriate ways. I actually do this with Ray. If he gets annoyed at me kissing him too much or something, I go, actually, your body, your choice. I'll leave you alone.
A girlfriend of mine taught me when Sienna was really young. I was like, oh, you know, give her a kiss goodbye or give whatever. And I love what she did with her child. She'd be like, oh, give Lozzie a hug goodbye. And if her daughter was like, no, she'd be like, well, that's okay. Do you want to give her a high five? Is there anything else you want to do to signal goodbye? Maybe she'd wave.
Yeah.
But it's not pushing that. If there's an interaction that they don't want to do, it's actually saying, that's cool, no stress. You do have to say goodbye to be polite, but if you just want to say it, that's also fine.
I remember as well being that kid that was like, get off me. If you didn't want, like if you're a 3-year-old and someone was trying to hug you and you're like, give me some bloody space. Yeah, so that is actually one thing I do with Ray already. So I think that's a really good point. Someone said, need help with this. It's hard to talk to boys about how to treat girls without, oh, this was a really interesting one, without sounding like girls. And then it got too long for the comment box. So she came into my DMs. Without sounding like girls are fragile or need to be treated with care due to being less strong than boys. So conversation is usually non-gendered around bodies and consent and not hurting other people's bodies, no matter what you're feeling. Emotions and feelings are okay, but that is not permission to hurt someone. I'd like to know if there's better ways to bring gender into this. My partner has 7 and 10-year-old boys. We've had conversations with 10-year-old about his girlfriend, in inverted commas. Like, she's not your girlfriend just because you like her. You have to ask her, and she has a choice if she wants to be your girlfriend or not. Absolutely love that. Someone else said, I don't think I'll talk about it as male versus female. So similar thing. More around enthusiastic consent, kindness, how to handle your emotions, and talking about issues. Also signs to look out for in relationships like red flags, trusting your gut and trusting your support network. Also building the confidence of my children so they know how they should be treated and respected by others. That is huge. Coming back to the comment box. It's hard, a constant battle with the way society wants to keep pushing the patriarch for teens. It's constant and daily and comes from all of the women in my boys' lives. Honesty, real conversations, listening to each other, then peeling back the layers, giving them agency to be feminists and ensuring they understand what that means. Do you know what's so interesting about that? When I was a teenager, the word feminism felt dirty. It was like, it wasn't a good thing to be a feminist. So it's so interesting now we're talking about that as a powerful tool. Like, good on you for being a male feminist. That's incredible. And the last one here is watch the new series of Heartbreak High. My teen boys will be watching. So that's a really good
tip. I'm dying to see it. It's on my hit list.
That's a great tip. So that rounds out an incredibly robust conversation. And I want to thank people for sharing some really fucked up stories that I wish hadn't happened to them. Lozzie, I actually do have a tip today. Do you have a tip to round things out?
Yes, I've got a couple of tips. I'm trying to figure out after that conversation was so deep, I feel like mine are a bit meaningless.
No, I think that's exactly what we need.
You go first though.
My tip is really mundane but important, and it comes from Brittany Noonan on Instagram, who's a mother of four and who had a baby at a similar time to me.
Oh, I followed her story. She had HG.
Yeah, she puts up Instagram stories, I wouldn't say daily, but often, and all they say is, "Mum, reminder to have your water, to do your pelvic floor exercises, and to have," I think the last one is, "to have your multivitamins or do something for you."
Yeah.
And I just want to add to that I went to Mums and Bubs Pilates this morning. It was one of those things that I nearly said was too hard, nearly didn't do. And I feel so much better for doing it. So just a reminder to the mums in a similar postpartum stage to me, or any stage of postpartum really, do something for yourself today. Go fill up your water glass, take whatever multivitamin you are taking, eat something nourishing. Look after yourself.
Love that. I love that for you and for everybody else. I have two tips today. One was something that I found fascinating when I went to the Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett's talk a couple of weeks back. So I want to share something that I found interesting. It was a very, very long talk and there was lots of good takeaways, but I thought this one was intriguing, more so to women and mums. And the other is genuinely a life hack for people that have fine hair like myself. I went to the hairdresser recently and he's like, "Whoa, when did you wash your hair?" And I said, quite embarrassed, yesterday. Oh, he was like, "Whoa, okay."
Did he think it was like a week ago?
Yeah, he was like, "It's so crazy." So he said to me, "Invest in a good dry shampoo." And I did. And I can't believe how much of a game changer it is.
It's just a great tip for mums too. Like, you forget that. Sometimes you don't have the time to wash your hair. It's an obvious tip, but it's one that I actually need. I'm going to go out and do that.
Yeah, but there's so many shit ones. There's so many shocking ones.
So like, what one are we using?
Okay, so I will link it in the bio because I don't know what the brand is called. It's Supermug one. It was a bit more expensive, but honestly,
if it's made you feel good, all for it.
I washed my hair for 4 days and I feel like I can't see the back.
Amazing, because I can't be fucked washing my hair. And sometimes I feel like I need to leave it greasy a bit. So I like that.
I can't. I got no hair. I'd look bald. Okay, so from the Diary of a CEO thing, one thing I thought was interesting is he made this analogy. There's some YouTube thing that you can Google off at, but the crux of it are, if you put an ant on a piece of paper and you get a biro and you draw lines, the ant won't go past that line. It's like in its small little ant world, it feels like that is a wall, so it won't cross it.
Wow.
But you can keep drawing lines on a piece of paper and it won't cross it. It'll be like, "Oh shit, that's a little wall," you know?
Yeah. Is that literal? Like, is this literal? Actual? Yeah, okay. I didn't know if it was like a metaphor. I mean, metaphor, obviously, but it's physically, that is what happens to ants.
It thinks it's a barrier. It's like, oh, because imagine for that line on the piece of paper, when you're like a microscopic ant, you'd be like, "Shit, that's real big." Yeah, it's a
that
wall.
Looks like the abyss, and I'm not heading there. Look, it would look like a drop off.
Yes, but what you'll find happens is, at some point on that paper, you will keep drawing lines and lines because the ant's going to go, "Oh, I can't go that way. I'll move another way." Right? At some point, it will accidentally, without realizing it, cross a line. But once it's crossed that line, once, it'll cross every other because it knows that it can do it.
Fucking oath. That's a beautiful way to end this.
I found that such a frigging unbelievable visual for motherhood, because I'm like, there are so many times when you think, I can't do that. I can't do that. And you just go on and do it. And then every other time it just gets done.
Yeah. It's even like the first time you put your two kids, when you've got your new second baby or even your first baby, and you put them in the car and you take them for a drive and it feels monumental. And then one day you just do it without even thinking about it.
Exactly. But the crux of it is, once you've done something once that you think you couldn't do it, your brain never thinks you can't do it.
Oh, that's incredible.
So if there's something that you're kind of thinking of doing, just get started. Just get started, because the first step you take, you know, you'll never have to take a step backwards, because in your mind, it already knows that you can. I found that, like, honestly, probably the biggest takeaway from this conversation. It was within the first 5 minutes, I was like, all right, well, I've learned that now. I can leave.
I'm leaving. Bye. And on the note of leaving, Lozzie, that is the perfect end to this episode. A nice lifting high after a really dark conversation.
It is. So as always, if you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a review and be sure to follow us on readyornot.pod. We'll see you next week.